Welcome back to Module 4 of Enabling DevOps Practices with Visual Studio Online Build. Say that all in one breath.
Exactly.
That's what you got to do. All right. So, this module, we are going to talk about automated testing, a very important concept with DevOps because there is a lot of waste out there, and so to speak, in lean manufacturing terms. Manual testing. There is, of course, a place for manual testing, but ideally, right, if you can just have a process automate those things, that makes everybody happier in some ways. Right?
More efficient, yes. And helps you work on that technical debt.
That's right. Yep. That's right. So what are we going to cover more specifically, though? This module, we're going to talk a little bit about the business value of automated testing. Then we're going to explain, you know, kind of when the different types of tests and when you might run them. And then the rest of the time, really, we're just going to spend, or at least Donovan's going to spend, demoing some of these different types of tests you can automate with Visual Studio Online Build. Automated testing. What is this process? Well, you know, you have some folks that create tests, typically dev, but we'll show you a little bit more about that. Explain the kind of dual role here perhaps in a little bit. But the idea is that when that test gets created, it automatically, every time there's new builds of that software, those tests are going to run. And what is the value? Why would we do this? Well, it's going to help accelerate delivery, right? Because again, if you're sitting there with somebody who has manual tests, and especially if you have separate teams for different types of tests. I've heard of companies that do this where they'll have one team which is the UX testers, and then the UX testers will get done, and then you'll wait, and then it'll be like, okay, well, this is the perf test guys, and they got to go off for 3 weeks and do some stuff and then come back, right? Right. So really automating is going to help accelerate that delivery pipeline of ideally getting that code as quickly as possible into the customer's hands, which is what your business should really care about. It also helps with repeatability, right? I mean, anytime you introduce manual steps into a testing process, you're going to introduce possible delays or differences, right? Oops, I forgot step 32. Now the test is invalid, and you may even have people looking at, why did that test fail? And it's like, well, because you forgot to do this step here. And you waste a lot of more time from people, right?
Absolutely.
So you're really going to help optimize those resources. And how do you measure this? Well, you could look at the frequency of your releases. You could look at the mean time to recover or the mean time to detect things. Ideally, right, if you're detecting these failures right on check-in within minutes or seconds or even hours, as opposed to the worst case scenario, right, which is bugs getting in production and customers finding those things or causing outages, you're gonna have a much bigger impact on your overall business.
Yeah, manual testing also has the disadvantage of they take so long to run and we're under a tight deadline that we simply just don't run them at all, right? So if we can automate that process, then we don't have to worry about how much time it takes to run those actual tests themselves. So I'm a big fan of automating your test cases whenever possible, but as you pointed out, try as you will, try as you might, there are gonna be some tests that simply are not gonna fit in that bucket. And you need to be able to make sure that that's the minority and not the majority of your testing, so that you can have the automated test run, and then you can go back in and run those handful of manual tests that you're required to run.
Okay.
I'm going to have a kind of a question on the slide.
Sure.
On the slide, I noticed that you have an ops guy. And when I think of automated testing, I don't think of ops. I think of developers. So I'm kind of curious of why he's on that slide.
Well, first of all, it's super important to point out that the ops guy is wearing red. So if you're a Star Wars person, you know the guy in the red shirt always dies, right? So I have to point that out. I mean, but on a technical level, okay, part of the foundational concept of DevOps is that you know, Dev and Ops will be working through every different phase of development in some way, shape, or form. So on the previous module, right, we had continuous integration. And you might think, like, why is an ops guy there for continuous integration? Well, I'm glad you asked. because in a new world, right, one of the key things is that an operations person should be working with infrastructure as code. So it may be that, you know, you need a tweak to a highly available infrastructure or a alerting or monitoring rule that you want to set up for one of your environments, and so you need to make a slight modification to that, or an auto scale policy, right? You may work with a developer on a load test and a corresponding auto scale policy to handle that load. You're going to check that in ideally to source code control, so you need to understand how that actually functions.
Absolutely.
Right? And then also, even if first, you know, you're not checking in things into source code control for continuous integration, you might also be there to just pick up the builds, right? You may be deploying, have an automated deployment pipeline of some type, and you need to take that build and go and know where it exists in this continuous integration system so you can pick it up and start doing deployments with it. So those are a couple reasons for that. For automated testing, I think we need to kind of go to the next slide on maybe what role does an ops person have with automated testing? I think going a click deeper on the types of tests will help us to kind of answer that question on where does ops play here.
Perfect.
So let's go to the next slide, and maybe you can kick that one off for us.
Right. So there's when do we run different types of tests during a DevOps pipeline? That's a really good question, and I get it quite often. And they're kind of in an order that I would run them. Unit tests are going to get run during your build, right? These are very developer-centric type of tests. They're written by the developers, and they're going to be able to execute very, very quickly. And they're normally isolated. If you're going to be a true unit test, it's isolated from any external dependencies, which means it's no longer a test accessing a database. It's not accessing any external web services. It's literally testing itself in isolation. So we are great candidates for running during your build. When you start getting into integration, user acceptance, or user interface, and web and performance type of testing, you're now literally running the entire application. You're going to be interacting with the user interface. It's going to be sending data down into the database. You're able to test that the integration of all your parts actually work as a unit. So those are better run after you've deployed the code to some environment, right? So I can't run an integration test if I don't have access to a database. I can't run an integration test if I can't reach that external web service. So that's not really a good candidate during our build where we're just compiling the code. We want to take that code after we've compiled it, and we want to deploy it somewhere, and we'll talk about that in the last module. And we have ideas for future MVAs that we can do that go really deep into how we can actually start deploying that code to environments, and at that point start firing up those load tests, firing up those integration tests, and doing a full end-to-end test of our application as it sits in an environment. So when you run them, unit's going to run during your build. Everything else can run during your release, including your manual test.
Okay. So, you know, as it relates to the kind of the operations role here, right? I mean, Unit and integration, that's more than likely going to be, right, stuff that a development person's going to do.
Or QA, too.
Yeah,
QA would do the integration
QA
for you.
Or even user interface testing,
sure,
right?
Sure, absolutely.
But perf and load is one where I think is a really perfect case where dev and ops can work good together there, right? So the kind of perfect scenario here is, you know, you set up some automated load testing against a staging environment, right? Looks identical ideally to what production is. You know that, let's say, for instance, there's going to be some form of marketing of campaign or something like that. The business is saying, we're going to have a million people come to this site or whatever that may be, right? And you want to work with your developer who's probably going to, you know, and the business who's going to say, make the custom test that actually you think is most realistic for the load, right? Microsoft has some cloud-based load testing suites, which we're not going to get into today. And then on the ops side, right, the ideal scenario would be you know the infrastructure really well. You know the production environments really well. And so if you work hand in hand, right, you have the dev guy who creates the load test that's realistic based on kind of what the business is saying. And then you have you as the ops person there with real life experience on how the infrastructure handles load. And so if you do that test and the ops person sits there and says, well, okay, throw me the load you think is gonna happen. I've got my production realistic environment. And guess what? I'm gonna set up, for instance, auto scale policies to handle that load. I'm gonna see where there's issues and make some tweaks accordingly. So in this particular case, you know, this is a really good way where ops can have a deeper engagement with automated testing. Now, aside from that deeper engagement, I think the other big thing is, you know, an evolved kind of operations person is probably going to start to be dealing a lot more with the release management pipeline. And as kind of Donovan's pointing out here, you know, those tests that are going to be run, they're likely going to be run somewhere that's along that pipeline that's closer to production. So as an ops person, you may not be writing the integration or the unit test or the user interface test, but you are going to be seeing that it's and making sure that it's fit into the appropriate place. And if there's a hang or a delay in that automated test running, in, let's say, in staging or whatever, before it is going there, you need to understand how those things are wired and possibly know the right contact people to say, hey, look, looks like your test is failing and, you know, you need to unblock this thing.
Absolutely.
Yep. So with that, I think we're going to move to automated.NET unit tests.
Great. So we're going to actually do a lot of fun stuff, because I think we actually are going to do three demos back to back here real quick.
There we go. Yeah. Automated.NET unit test, automated Java Maven test.
Yep.
And then the Sonar Cube with the Java application.
So yeah, getting into technical debt and how we can manage that using our build system as well. So
yep.
So we're going to switch over to my demo machine. And the build we ran earlier actually had test results as a part of that build. You'll remember that I checked the box saying, I'd like you to continue with my build even if my tests fail. I did that intentionally because if I click on this link here, what it's going to do is it's going to take me to what we call our test hub. And our test hub is going to show me the results of that test run from that previous build. And as you can see, very quickly, I can show one of them passed, one of them failed. And this is great, and this is all .NET, and we can give you code coverage and a lot of cool metrics. But you would expect that from Microsoft. It's a .NET product running on a .NET platform. We'd expect to have this type of rich experience. But what I'm going to show you is how quickly we can turn this exact same experience on for your Java developers as well. Not only taking their JUnit tests and running them and being able to surface them in this hub for you, but also be able to go back in and even wire in Sonar Cube.
So let me just kind of clarify, though.
Sure.
Just something really foundational for folks. How is this test now automated versus manual, and how does that work, right? This is a very
great
basic
question.
Test. For people who may not be familiar, I mean, a dev person's probably got it, but maybe just,
sure.
You know.
Absolutely. So a unit test is actually code written right alongside the code in which you're trying to develop. And the way that we were able to execute it is we were actually using this little task here. So remember when we first started, I used a template. And that template had four different tasks in it, one of which was going to compile our code, the other which was going to attempt to go ahead and run it. Well, we were able to get away with this because by convention, when we create a test project as part of our solution, it usually has the word test somewhere in it. And our task is smart enough to say, go find any assembly that has the word test in it and assume it's a test project and go try to run test out of it. So the way that we got it automated was a developer literally sat down inside of Visual Studio, created a project, and coded this particular test. This test called into the other DLL, exercise some piece of it, and then returns a true or false value, letting you know if it passed.
Okay, so if they were to do that test manually, they would actually just pull up Visual Studio,
correct,
run into the Test Explorer, and say, run that test.
Exactly.
And just because it was already a part of this project which you have checked into source code control, now it's able to automatically pick
absolutely.
Up and just run it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. And the same is this, it's the exact same for the Java guys. The Java guys are going to go inside of Eclipse or their IDE of choice. They're going to start writing some JUnit tests that live alongside the project in which they're testing. They're going to check that all into source control, and using Maven, we're going to go execute those tests. And we're going to do something a little bit more fun for our Java side as well, because we want to go back to the whole cross-plat and being able to interact with other services. So what we're going to do, instead of downloading the code like we did in the first module and then re-uploading it into our own private repository, we're going to pull code directly from GitHub without having to put it anywhere else. So I'm going to return to GitHub here really quick, and I'm just going to show you around how we're going to get to the code that we need to. In the Dark Warrior account here, you'll also see that I have a project tracker application. If you've ever seen me present at TechEd or Ignite or Build, I use this People Tracker application quite often. So you'll get to see that project or go play with it yourself if you'd like to, because it's just here up in GitHub. Well, this project here called Project Tracker happens to be a Java application with a POM file in it. Now, to connect your GitHub to your VSO account, you need to create something called an access token. So I'm not going to assume you know how to do that, because the first time I tried, I didn't know, and I kind of wished it was easier to find out. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to simply sign into GitHub here and show you how you'll be able to create one of these access tokens, which are required to tie your GitHub to our build system. So I'm going to just log in here quick. Dark Warrior. I do not want to store that. And then from here, you're going to use your own little person icon at the top. go to settings, and then from here, you're going to be able to create personal access tokens. Now, I've already created one, but all you would do is simply say generate new token, give the token a name, and it's very important at this step that you actually use the admin repo hook. This is the one that's going to allow us to wire continuous integration from GitHub check-ins, or commits as they would be in Git, all the way back down into our build system and trigger a build automatically. Now, I've already gone through that exercise. So now back here on our build system, I can say I'd like to create a new build. And we don't have a template today for a Maven build per se, but we will be able to add your own templates here as well. But so what we're going to do is we're just simply start with an empty one. And then we're going to add a new step. And the step that we're going to add is the Maven step. And all I have to do now is navigate down to my POM file. Oh, excuse me, I missed a step here. Let's go to my repository and let's tell them we're actually going to be using GitHub. When you generate that access token, it's going to generate this token that you can then use and provide. And I believe I've already copied that to my clipboard here. So I should be able to, for some reason, it's not letting me do that here. Let's see what's going on. Well, that's interesting. We change VSO quite often. It's actually changed since the last time I tried this last night. So we're going to go ahead and use a personal access token here. We're going to copy what's on my clipboard. And connection, we're just going to say GitHub. Let's say OK. And let's see if this is actually going to work the way I want it to, because the last time I did this, I did not do it this way. This is very interesting. So let's go back. And we're going to refresh this. And that is what I want. And here we go. We now have access to all of my projects that are inside of GitHub. We want to do the project tracker application. And we are just going to use the master branch. And now we should be able to go back here and use this to navigate to our POM file. With that set, I can now simply save this, and we're going to save this one as Java. And then we're going to go ahead and queue this particular build once it's saved. And again, I didn't have to install anything. Our hosted agents are able to build the Java code for you. So I don't have to go stand up an agent. I could have used either of the agents that David and I set up for you in the previous module. But I'm just going to go ahead and let this one run on the hosted module. Now, while this is building in the background, we'll come back and we'll look at the output of this build and see that the JUnit test actually did execute the way that we wanted it to. I'm going to take you and talk to you about SonarQube. We're not doing an MVA on SonarQube, but SonarQube is a very popular product that allows you to be able to view the technical debt in an application that you have. And we can actually execute SonarQube for you during our builds, especially with our Maven projects. It's actually already supported. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take you to a pre-configured build definition and show you exactly what you have to do to allow you to publish your changes and your technical debt to SonarQube. So I've already set up SonarQube. I blog at donovanbrown.com. There is a detailed blog there that tells you exactly how to install and build your own SonarQube and walk you through this particular build definition that I'm about to go through with you. So I don't want to bore you with details that you can go and find out for yourself there as well. So here we go. In another VSO that I have set up, I have a very similar task to the one I just showed you. It's just called Maven. And this is called my SonarQube build. And what you'll notice is that the goal originally was just package. And I simply added sonar. And then I added some parameters or options that I needed to pass in so that it can locate my SonarQube in the cloud. And it can actually connect to the database to then be able to send in the information. Now, what you'll notice here is that this format that we're using here, where I have a question mark, a dollar sign, and then some value in between parentheses, that is me defining a variable or using a variable in this particular point. If I go back to my variables tab, you'll see that I've defined these different variables that I wanted to use in that particular command. I have one that points to my SonarQube URL, which is the SonarQube I stood up in Azure, and the blog post will tell you exactly how to do that. Here's the JDBC connection that I need to be able to get to the database that I need to write my results to. And then obviously I have my username and my password, which I've safely encrypted here so that you cannot see it. And it's also encrypted on disk, right? You don't have to think that if I were to go and somehow compromise the database and do a select star that I would be able to see these passwords. All the information that you encrypt here in the user interface is also encrypted on disk as well.
So after I do that, when I come back to my build, I simply passed in this parameter. Again, this is all explained in the blog post. And I simply queued this particular build. And in doing so, I was then popped over to my, I can pop over. Let me correct that. You don't automatically end up here. But we're working on ways for you to be able to surface this information through our build system. And as you can see, all my Sonar Cube information has been collected for me in our build. So by now, I think I've talked long enough to see that our Maven build that we just created a moment ago has completed. And if I were to go back to our dashboard for this particular build, I'm going to refresh my test results. And as you can see, I have my JUnit test results that I just ran in my build right here on my dashboard. And I can go to the exact same hub that I went to before with my .NET code and see the output of my JUnit code as well. So you can run tests through a multitude of different test engines, and I can show you that list here really quickly as well. If we were to go back in and modify this, not only can I run all of my JUnit tests out of Maven, if I had another test system that I wanted to go through, you can see there's a whole series of load tests that I can now instrument. So the test that David was talking about that the infrastructure or the ops guy is going to be interested in running, we can actually run those load tests during our build if we're able to target an environment that is already stood up. We have the ability to run in a Xamarin test cloud. So if you're doing mobile development, I don't want you to think that, oh, this build works great for Java and .NET, but what about my Xamarin and my Cordova and my Android and my iOS? We have you covered on all those bases, and we allow plugins so that we can actually test in all those environments as well. So we're going to switch task now from testing in our build, and we're going to go talk about some continuous deployment, I believe, in the next module.
Yeah.
So that's how we do testing inside of our environments. It's extremely, extremely simple. You just add a task and let the task do its work, and out pops all this great test results.
Well, yeah, I mean, and just to, you know, to hit on that again, it's like, you know, we have this extensible platform, right?
So
if there's something that you have, as far as the test goes, that you can do without having to sit there and click, if it's not already there as a predefined task, well, there's an opportunity, right, to have this extensible system to run those automated tests in this pipeline.
Absolutely. And we have this catch-all task in our toolbox called the PowerShell, like run PowerShell. And as we talked about before, any CLI can be executed with this particular command. So don't feel like you have to wait for us to put a first-class task in the taskbar, right? Or even wait for us to allow you to do that, right? Today, right. This very moment, you can go and take any arbitrary PowerShell that you want, and you can run it during our build, and it can kick off any testing environment that you like.
There's also batch script. There's also
absolutely.
There's also shell script,
absolutely.
Right? So you've got a lot of options in
absolutely.
Terms of plugging into the overall system there. Okay, well, with that, I think we're gonna call it a wrap on automated testing, and we're gonna close with the last module coming up next on continuous deployment. So stay tuned.